But even having come down, gold is still incredibly high.
Yeah.
Gold at 4,500, if you'd said this 2 or 3 years ago, is incredible. The fact that it's coming down from 5,000 is all just framing. There is a bit of a shock if oil prices do feed into inflation later in the year. Ultimately, holding that cash is not safe. It's being eroded incredibly fast and incredibly quickly. If you wanted to buy a house in 10 years and you're saving, you know, a modest amount each month, then you can say, okay, well, what does my risk look like? Because this is the goal of the deposit that I need to get to.
The Market Musings Podcast.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Market Musings Podcast here from Stopbox, where we're joined again by Dan Lane, the UK lead analyst for Robinhood, and of course, the co-host, Dan Flynn. So, Dan Lane, how are you? Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, all good, all good. We were saying there before, not really much happening in the market, so it's all been pretty calm, yeah.
Well, calm after the concerns earlier. And Dan, how are you?
Yeah, all good. Yeah, like Dan says, it's a bit of a crazy time, isn't it? ISA deadlines coming up as well, there's plenty to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, what a difference, you know, like a few weeks made. I mean, I was in Zurich at the Swiss Mining Institute, and when I was there in November, it was all very bullish. The macro thesis was still very much intact. And then I go back in March hoping to continue that theme. And yeah, only 2 weeks before or 10 days before, of course, the spanner was thrown in the works. And even some of the panels had been prepared, still quite bullish, and it didn't quite fit some of the concerns of investors in the room. And the sense I was getting them, particularly from, I would say, older people or bigger funds, not your individual retail investors, was that there is fear out there and people are not sure what to do. So the cash is being held. There's more cash being held on balance sheets than in the market. And a lot of people were after physical gold. Should I get more physical gold? But from my point of view as an individual retail investor and Dan Flynn, of course, I haven't done anything. I've just left my portfolio. And the sort of message I did get from talking to different people was, this is a short-term painful situation that shouldn't go on for too long, a few months maybe at worst. But the damage has been done. But in terms of the sort of macro thesis, there's nothing to really worry about. But Dan Flynn, I think you're in the same boat, right? You've sort of continued to hold away.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I certainly haven't been moving to cash. I've been adding to some of my more high conviction stocks, if anything. We were saying before, the only question is, when is the bottom? Because obviously we don't know what's coming. Hopefully, if you're right and it is short term, then there should at least be some additional upside from buying on any weakness if that long-term strength continues.
Buying the bottom is the hard one, isn't it? You've got to read and watch what you can and try and make that best decision. But I did get the sense that it's one of your last chances to buy a silver under $100. But Dan Lane, what are your investors? What are you hearing from Robinhood side of things?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. And I think our investors have always loved tech. I do an article every month reflecting on the most popular stocks that have been bought in the past month. It's always tech. And there's a lot of the familiar names in there, you know, your Teslas and your Nvidias and everything. But increasingly, we're seeing that build out, that kind of dissipation into the AI infrastructure. So Mara, previously at Marathon Digital, and a lot of the building blocks of the AI theme. And actually, we've seen that continue. Even throughout all of this craziness from day to day, we're seeing that attitude stay, which is actually really nice because you're seeing investors take this super long-term view. And as you say, there's a bit of a, well, these prices are depressed. I'm getting the assets that I liked at a discount anyway, so I'm going to buy that. But also, there's this, probably the biggest surprise for me in this whole thing has been this kind of flight to safety has meant tech this time around. So it's only a couple of months ago that everyone's saying these CapEx worries are, you know, really troubling the market. Now they're like, oh, I really want these halo, these heavy assets, low obsolescence. Well, now that includes these tech stocks because they're sitting on so much cash. So it's amazing with just what a couple of months gives perspective to. But yeah, our investors are sticking to tech.
Well, I suppose some of these big tech companies are solid businesses, aren't they? I mean, Nvidia, Tesla, as you mentioned, they're not just adding .com to their name and ruin some sort of crazy boom. We probably are in some kind of crazy boom, particularly with AI, but the ones you mentioned, they're solid businesses. So why would they not be a good place to put your money?
Exactly. I mean, especially if you're looking at the likes of gold, we've seen gold come off because of these higher inflation and higher interest rate worries. So if your flight to safety doesn't feel that safe, where else do you go? And I think, to be honest, I don't really blame a lot of people who are sitting in cash because, as we just said, from morning till afternoon, the narrative is changing. So if you're deploying, especially in an institutional scale, if you're deploying capital and you're wrong by the afternoon, well, there's not much impetus. There's not much reason for you to actually deploy it in the morning.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's interesting times for sure. But the reason we're on the podcast today is because the ISA deadline is approaching in the UK, of course. This is the tax wrapper. I don't know, maybe, Dan, you want to just explain, first of all, what an ISA is and how it works for individual people.
Yeah, absolutely. So I should say before we do this that nothing I say is advice. I've got my compliance eyes burrowing into the side of my head here, so I can keep them happy. Nothing I say is a sign for anyone to go out and do anything. But yeah, you're right. ISAs are really important in the UK investing scene. So an ISA is you've got your, specifically a stocks and shares ISA, you've got 20 grand as an allowance every year that you can use. There's lots of myths and half understandings around the allowance, but you've got £20,000 that you can make use of. And that means that you don't pay UK capital gains tax or UK dividend tax on any returns that you see in that ISA. When it comes to taking your money out, that's tax-free too. So it's just a really good, sensible way to start investing and make use of those tax benefits that we all have access to.
Mm-hmm. And you can do it with a bank account. Simple, can't you just put the money in an ISA and save it away? Or you can do a stocks and shares ISA, which is basically where you buy your stocks in an ISA wrapper effectively with your broker, and any gains from that is tax free. It doesn't matter how high it goes, right? Once it's the raw cash that goes in that counts. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. There are different flavors. I mean, there's been all sorts over the years that help to buy ISAs and all that sort of stuff. But essentially, what we know in the UK is your cash version with your probably high street bank or your building society. And then you've got your stocks and shares version, which gives you access to, I mean, whatever that platform has. At Robinhood, we've got over 6,000 US assets that people make use of within their ISA.
Okay.
We actually just launched ours recently. So it's been hotly awaited. And we know that because our community, at our community events, people just kind of say, I'm going to ask about those three letters, Dan, when are you launching it? And now we've actually launched it.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're really happy to offer that. And it's the same Robinhood experience and the Slick app that I have nothing to do with. We've got very good techies that do that. But I love using it. So yeah, we're excited about ISA season.
Yeah. And do you see stocks and shares ISAs becoming even more popular with the changes to the cash ISA allowances from 2027 onwards?
Yeah. So listen, super important. And those changes, for anyone who doesn't know, that cash proportion is going to come down to, you can put a maximum of £12,000 in and down from 20. And this is in an effort to get everyone investing. You know what? There's all sorts of, people have different opinions on this, but my opinion is this is a great way to introduce people to the markets. It also has to be accompanied with education. I think if you just reduce the allowance and say, crack on, lads, that's not really enough. But this is why, we're so hot on education at Robinhood, and we send out things. We send out emails every Saturday morning, updating people on what's happened during the week, a little bit of friendly guidance on how to use things during tax season and how to make the most of their investments. But yes, ISA becomes incredibly important whenever, especially the stocks and shares portion, whenever the cash element goes down.
Do you think a stock and shares ISA is, anyone who's considering investing is really a no-brainer just to open one alongside your sort of normal stocks and share, normal trading account?
Yeah, well, I mean, ultimately, you got to do what's right for you, right? But it's difficult to look past it. If you think about, if you're starting off investing, I understand people think it's one more thing to get their head around. So maybe that they start off in a normal trading account, but it's actually very, very simple. It just comes with tax benefits. It's kind of just it. Do you know the biggest thing for me is that you don't have to worry about possible paperwork. That's always been the biggest driver. The tax benefits are great and everything, but actually thinking about the fact that I never have to fill in, a tax return or talk to HMRC about capital gains or dividend tax, that's actually a really big thing. or even just keeping track of them, about what was my dividend tax, did I go over it? Because we did some maths earlier in the year, and you don't have to have a huge portfolio before you go over your £500 dividend allowance during the year. And it can sneak up on you, especially if you've got like company shares or something elsewhere in your portfolio. So yeah, it's a really good way to just take the thinking out of it and just to take the worry out of it all. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, it's like another thing for people to get their heads around. Are there any common mistakes you see when people approach ISAs?
Yeah, and to be honest, we see so many. And actually, before I say them, I'll say that this is probably the industry's fault. I don't think this is the consumer's fault. But there's also, we see things like, you know, in a previous life, I worked on, when I just started out in the industry, I was on the phones at a big asset manager, and people would phone up and say, I've invested in a fund called ISA. And unfortunately, they thought they were investing, and they'd left their money in cash for years because they thought that was the investment.
Really?
At that stage, and still really, you can't offer people advice, but you're kind of saying, that's not a fund, that's the account. People do make that mistake. Because if it's a cash ISA, that is, you just put it in the account, right? You don't choose which cash to put it in. It's just there. You got to choose the investments in a stocks and shares ISA. So people make that mistake. The other thing is people think that you have to have, we see this a lot. People think that you have to have like a 20 grand minimum. They think that's the hurdle to get started. You have to remind them, no, that's the allowance. You can put in a dollar with us if you want. And people also think that we did some research earlier in the year, and people thought that to get going, you have to have roughly £2,500. That was the ballpark figure. And it kind of like zooming out and like kind of thinking about that, people think that ISAs are a reward for being wealthy rather than a tool to grow your wealth. And I think that's the biggest things we need to change in the UK. People think that, you know, an investment is something that only rich people do. And you have to kind of unpack that a little bit, and you go, well, get there. They got there through that account. So there's lots of things. And this is why education and talking to people in such a jargon-free way is so important. That's what we try and do. And that's what you guys try and do as well.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's a really, really good point. There is still that sort of fear, isn't there? And sort of, it's not tax avoidance. It is, but it's completely legal. It is a tax-free wrapper. But
yeah, I mean, it's efficiency.
It's
right?
Sort of
tax efficient.
Yeah.
Pension.
But it's associated with, it's reserved for the very wealthy people who don't pay the taxes, right? You've still got that kind of perception going on, maybe. But I thought it was very interesting what you said about your research said 2,500 to get going. So that's what, that can you elaborate a bit more on that? Is that what people were thinking that, to make it any even worth bothering with, that sort of number was the kind of good number to sort of start with?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. There's one, people have a view of your traditional asset manager or your traditional advisor who maybe won't look at an account with a low value, and that idea just still persists. It's also the cost element. If people are used to what was kind of the legacy industry in the UK, you're paying upwards of £10 per trade. Well, actually, if I go in with £100, I'm going to need to make 10%, at least 10% before that's even worth it. So actually, the worth of this investing account only starts to benefit me once I have a bigger account. So there's lots of ideas, and there's lots of old school, you know, when you ask people about what does an investment company look like, or an asset manager, they still think about the paneled walls and the red braces, and they don't necessarily think about the younger generation who, you know, 50% of our investors are new to investing as a pursuit. So people are coming to us in the first instance, and they're changing their perception of what an investor looks like. Because you just have our app in your pocket, and you can get going with as little as a dollar. You know, we're really trying to change this, and, you know, our fees are, you know, no account fees, no commission, and very low FX. So we're really trying to change this perception. When we say to people, it's not 2,500. You know, you can get going with a dollar. They're really surprised. Some of them are really genuinely surprised, and I think that speaks to how underserved the UK public has been in this respect.
Yeah. And sticking with the theme of young people, there's also the lifetime ISA, isn't there, where you get a 25% top up. I know I certainly had one before we bought our first house, because you can use it for that as well as for your pension. But I'm not sure, has the limit on the house price you can use it to buy fallen? Are they still effective products that you see young people gravitating towards?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And actually, it's not the first kind of ISA of its kind. We had the Help to Buy ISA before that was kind of fallen into it. And we've seen a few of these beforehand. Look, I think we should say that anything that helps young people get on the housing ladder is a positive step, right? It's become a complete nightmare. I bought my place a couple of years ago, and we moved in, and my partner said, we are never moving again. Because saving up for it, and then the transaction itself was just hellish. So anything that makes that even more palatable, brilliant. Lices, there's only a couple of providers that you can really go to in the UK. I think people were waiting to see how they take off. Buying in London makes the limits a little bit less attractive. You know, I think it was like 450 was the limit at one stage. And actually people looking to buy the average house in London were paying more than that. You know, there's lots of limitations. And then if you think, okay, well, I'm not going to be able to use it for that, suddenly the only other option is retirement. So there's nothing in between. So I think people were kind of a little bit standoffish, especially because you could just use your full ISA allowance as well. You could just put 20k in your, you know. And there was also the threat of clawing back that interest, maybe with a little bit of a penalty if you weren't using it. So there were lots of reasons why they didn't really take off as much as people would have hoped, essentially. But I think we're really behind the government's plans to, you know, make the ISA landscape a lot simpler. Maybe bring it into a one-stop shop for all of your different needs. If there is going to be a product simply for housing, maybe calling it something else, because people are getting confused between the different flavors of ISAs. Because there are benefits to this account, but calling it an ISA means people are getting a little bit confused.
Yeah, definitely. Having several different product categories and types isn't helping with the thing we were talking about basic understanding of what these actually are, is it? Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing groundbreaking, really. I would say start with your goals and work backwards. A lot of people open their ISA, they're confronted with, you know, an absolute library of stocks, and you go, well, what am I going to choose? So if you go for your goals and work backwards, and then you can start to see, okay, well, what's my time horizon? What's my risk tolerance? How much have I got to invest, actually? And then when you start to push and pull between these different facets, and that actually helps choose your assets. So things like, you know, if you wanted to buy a house in 10 years and you're saving, you know, a modest amount each month, then you can say, okay, well, what does my risk look like? Because this is the goal of the deposit that I need to get to. Suddenly, if you say, well, actually, I can afford to invest more than that, maybe your risk tolerance can come down slightly, or maybe you can, you know, shorten your time frame. And that's what I mean about the playing these elements off against each other helps inform what you can invest in. And then most people find it handy to invest monthly. Ideally, you would, you know, invest your 20K as an ISA early bird on the 6th of April in the new tax year. Not everyone has that luxury, because, you know, we know the value of compound interest. It only, you know, only gets better with time. So earlier the better. But if you can't do that, and actually with the amount of volatility we're seeing, there's nothing to stop you just investing monthly, trying not to time the market, because the amount of people that end up just sitting on the sidelines waiting for that perfect time, and then perfect time never comes. It's about it. And we did some research there. If you, over the past, from 2001 to 2020, if you had miraculously got the best moment to invest monthly every single time, every single year, you would have been, you know, by far the best investor. But if you got it slightly wrong, you could have been the very worst investor. And actually, the one that right bang in the middle was just the person who never even looked at the market.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you had miraculously got the best moment to invest monthly every single time, every single year, you would have been, you know, by far the best investor. But if you got it slightly wrong, you could have been the very worst investor. And actually, the one that right bang in the middle was just the person who never even looked at the market.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They just
so much every month. It just goes out, and you pick where you want it to go, and you just dollar cost average it. You know, the biggest wealth builder is your income. So, you know, when it comes in, a lot of it goes out. We all know that, to various things. If you can set aside some of it to go out into something that you can keep, that's an investment, or maybe it's, you know, physical gold or something, I think that's not a bad thing to have. It sort of, it almost locks it away, because I think in your mind, it's, in certainly my mind, that money is gone, but it hasn't gone, right? It's still there. It's just sort of gone from your immediate ability to spend it. And it's actually amazing how doing that over a period of time, it just builds up, and you look back, you know, in a year or two, and you're like, oh gosh, that's built up quite a lot. You know, I mean, I myself started doing wine investing about two and a bit years ago, and it was more a bit of fun. My uncle's done it for a few years, and he said, you're not going to make a lot of money on it, maybe, you know, 5-6% or something. It's still better than inflation generally, but it's more just quite fun. And that's obviously a very long time horizon. You know, we're talking like that's retirement, that's 30, 40 years for some of the top wines to mature there. Yeah. But yeah, so although the value of the wine hasn't actually gone up very much at all in 2 years, I look back and I'm like, oh gosh, but that's just all raw cash that's gone in. You know, that's safe in there. If I absolutely need it, I can get it. But it's nice to see that you, and it makes you feel better that you've got this sort of thing building in the background. So I completely agree that just do it, basically. Just try and do it monthly with what you can, and you'll be amazed at how quickly that builds up.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Dan, do you have any anything else you wanted to ask about ISAs? I mean, I know you use your ISA a lot. I do have an ISA. I don't use it that much. I'm guilty of that. But I do have a junior stocks and shares ISA for my children, which I do regularly. And that's the same thing, right? It's money that goes in. It's all tax free, and no one can get to it until they're 18. That is actually locked away.
Yeah.
But it's quite nice to do that, and hopefully they can have something when they're a little bit. I think 18 is still a bit young, I'll be honest. I think it should be 25 personally. Well, I think at 18, if you get tens of thousands of pounds, you're going to do stuff with it that's probably not wise.
Yeah, 25 seems right. One thing I was going to ask, Dan, is a lot of our viewers will be frequent investors. So they're investing in, you know, specific stocks. If they hold that outside of an ISA, but they want to, for any future gains, have it inside of a wrapper, whether it's because we're in a new tax year and they've got that whole 20k back, or they've got a bit of remaining allowance, is there anything they can do, or do they just have to, if they're adding to it, then make a separate investment into in the same stock but within an ISA rather than in their trading account?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that people have done for quite a while is called bear an ISA, where you would sell the asset and then in the current tax year make the most of your capital gains and then buy the same asset in your ISA in the new tax year. That's just a way to still hold the same asset, but then you're essentially making use of your tax free allowance this year and then making it all of it tax efficient in the new year. But yeah, I mean, there are benefits to this account, but you know, the government are wise to people maybe trying to game the system a little bit. So it's generous, but it's not too generous. You know, if you're rich enough to hold your assets, fill up your ISA, and then maybe fill up your pension, and then you've got your GIA, your general investing account. You're probably okay paying a little bit of tax in there. You know, you've used 80 grand worth of tax efficiency. So the government's saying, okay, well, you know, we've been kind enough. You should. You've got to pay your tax now.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So it's a case of, if you've invested outside the ISA, then, and you want to keep investing in that stock, then start investing in it in the wrapper or using that better ISA. But generally, it's just down to you how you utilize that 20K. Perhaps at the start of the year, when you're making new investments, you should think about putting them in the wrapper rather than using the GIA outside of the wrapper.
Yeah, I mean, and another thing we should say, we're coming up to the end of the tax year, and another, we talked about kind of myths and misunderstandings earlier. One of the big ones is people say, well, I wouldn't know what to invest in. And you go, well, okay, you can just secure your allowance. You can just put your money up now, make sure that you make you've made it tax efficient, and then just come back to it when you're a little bit more comfortable and maybe the volatility is putting you off. But to not put it in and not make use of your allowance because of volatility is, you know, that seems strange to me.
Absolutely, yeah. And with this, with this cash allowance for cash ISAs going down, can you hold cash in a stocks and shares ISA up to the 20 grand like, because for example, you might want to do that now with the geopolitical situation being so uneasy. Is there like, is there a time limit? So maybe you can hold it in cash for a few months while things settle down, but you can't just leave it in cash for you know, indefinitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good shot, and actually, the government's been quite wise to this because, for exactly that reason, you're getting ISA accounts that are offering upwards of 3% on cash, which is, you know, it's a decent return. It's not inflation, but it's better than nothing. What we would say is that there's no harm to holding cash in an ISA, but if it's a stocks and shares ISA, you've invested in it for the stocks and the shares. That cash is somewhere you might want to leave it in between your investments or whenever you've got that ultimate risk off attitude. But ultimately you do want to be deploying that back into the market because it's not to shore up any balance sheets anywhere. It's just because we know that inflation is eating your cash. You know, if you're getting 3% on your account, well, inflation is still running high. You're not, especially if we get this a bit of a shock, if oil prices do feed into inflation later in the year, ultimately holding that cash is not safe. It's being eroded incredibly fast and incredibly quickly. So yeah, you can hold cash, but it's a stopover, as a little bit of a layover between your investments, not as a long-term strategy.
And so with the deadline approaching very fast, you can basically take advantage of that now by topping up before the end of the tax year, and then you get the fresh allowance. So this is quite a good time. Do you find a lot of movement happens with ISAs around this time of year?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've been working in ISAs for about 15 years now. As I say, I started off on the phones at a big asset manager, and the amount of calls that come in at around 23:59 on the 5th and the 5th of April, and people, you know, oh, I've forgotten my password. What was it again? And you're watching the clock, literally. Tick down to midnight. We're pretty bad in the UK. We leave everything to the last second, which is why you see in all the tubes and buses and adverts and everything, it's complete ISA season right now, because people know that people leave it to the last second, which is another reason to not do it that way, because you're already probably having to think about taxes elsewhere, in your job, and if I put stuff into my pension, have I made the most of my personal allowances? It all comes to a head, and then trying to get on phone to any broker this time of year is a nightmare as well. So if you're in the boat now, I mean, it's easy to say you shouldn't be here, but if you are, I would say you've got this week to really just, you know, make the most of it.
Absolutely. Good. Nice and timely doing this podcast. I wonder if you mentioned at the start about, you're seeing the same popular stocks. It's tech. Are you seeing anything on the sort of commodity side? And because gold and, of course, silver doing very well recently, incredibly well, actually. And I know some of my sort of anecdotal friends are sort of inquiring about buying that sort of commodity. Are you seeing any of that, or is it still really much weighted in on the tech side?
We've seen some low level kind of, because we offer US stocks, and we've seen some kind of like low level kind of individual small cap stocks with individual stories, and I think that's because they've got, you know, they've got very individual stories to tell. It's also because a lot of those, I mean, you know yourself, when you have an asset, as a young explorer, if you have that asset, anything that comes out of the ground above your cost is just pure profit. So especially in this environment, whenever gold has been so high and silver is so high, it's so attractive to be part of that, especially silver. We saw a good appetite for silver a little bit earlier in 2025. Something I've been particularly interested in following is kind of the lithium and lithium spodumene. It's up kind of 44% year to date, and that took a big nosedive last year. But I'm starting to see a little bit more appetite for that. There's been geopolitical problems in kind of West Africa, it's funny with these junior miners. You concentrate on the business case, and suddenly there's cases of terrorism, where there's guns on site, or people holding up the mines, and you have to remember the risks that come with these investments. But ultimately, when you're looking at, as you've just said, you look at these metal prices, even having come down, gold is still incredibly high.
Yeah,
and I know that because I was. shopping for wedding rings, and I locked in a price around $4,000. And the guy said, and the guy in the shop said, "No, you don't have to lock in this price, but you know, when you come back, it could be different." And I was thinking, "Oh yeah." And then, of course, $5,000. So I was, yeah, trying to explain commodity hedging to my fiance in the jewelry shop wasn't great. But I think people are starting. Even the big investment banks are saying, "Let's not lose sight of this. Gold at $4,500. If you'd said this 2 or 3 years ago, is incredible. The fact that it's coming down from $5,000 is all just framing." We're seeing a little bit of an attitude of kind of rare earths, and I think that was off the political situation with China last year. But this comes in fits and starts. And I, to be honest, the commodity investors are happy to be in and out of the market as they see fit. And we're seeing the same attitude with our investors. They'll go into tech when tech's feeling a little bit ropey. Maybe they'll have a commodity hedge.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No, interesting. I'm glad you mentioned rare earths. Yes, because I've been seeing that as well. And I think that's something that is attracting a lot of people. But lithium, as you say, and that had a great start a few years ago and pulled back quite a lot, but is now really, really looking quite strong again. But jurisdictional risk is very important as well. I mean, tin, for example, I know tin was becoming popular, but a lot of the tin comes from the DRC, and there's often problems in the DRC with sort of little wars going on, etc. Yeah. But I mean, Dan Flynn are more on the commodities side, and I think this sort of pullback we're seeing in gold is healthy, because even in a bull market, I was talking to a very you may have heard of him, Rick Rule. You were aware of Rick Rule, so he's been through a few cycles in his time, and he said it won't be stair steps to heaven. You will definitely, absolutely, 100% see 30-40% pullback in the commodities prices, in the gold price, and the equities will be even more. So you've got to have patience and tenacity. And potentially, yeah, at the moment, it's a good opportunity to take advantage of some of those pullbacks. But that's great. Thank you, Dan, for talking to us about the ISA, which is probably a bit of a strange topic to talk about for a lot of people. It's a bit of a myth, but I think you've explained quite a lot there. Mm. And hopefully people can take advantage of that ISA in the next week and then into the new year. So unless Dan Flynn's got any last questions.
No, that's great. It's been really useful, Dan.
Excellent.
Yeah, good. Well, Dan, let's catch up again. Let's pick another topic. We're going obviously into the summer, which is, well, we're not. I mean, in a few months we will be, but traditionally the summer becomes quite dry on the markets. Maybe we can catch up, the end of May or something, maybe just before people start to think about holidays and just get a sense of where we are. Because, you know, tomorrow everything might be very different. You never know with what's going on geopolitically.
But, exactly, yeah.
Thank you.
Cool. Well, thanks very much for having me on, guys. Really enjoyable as always.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Dan. Okay, take care.
Cheers, guys.